Hey everybody, and welcome to Hey Jorge, where we start and facilitate conversations between underrepresented and intersectional voices. I'm Jorge Olivares of HeyJorge.com, and today I'm joined by two comedians who I have not been able to see in the flesh for quite some time, which makes sense because of quarantine and the pandemic. But one of them, Shalewa Sharp, is somebody who I believe I've had on my SiriusXM show a couple times, but I definitely was on the air with her on SiriusXM, somebody whose comedy is incredibly biting and kind of in your face in the most beautiful way. And also Gastro Almonte, who I saw at a showcase for Latino comedians not too long before quarantine started. And I love that they have since joined together. And this is where I have had a chance to see them. They've had video components for their brand new weekly podcast called The War Report with Gastro Almonte and Shalewa Sharp. And we'll talk about the origin story behind not only the name of the podcast, but also the imagery of the podcast. But the cool thing is they talk about news, politics, culture in a way that is very fun as somebody who's also a person of color, as somebody who exists between the margins. It's great to hear two people who are at the top of their game talking about things in only the way they know how. So very excited to welcome Shalewa Sharp and Gastro Almonte here to Hey Jorge. Thank you all for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I want to start off, Shalewa, what was it about Gaster's either comedic style, either the friendship y'all have? How was it that y'all thought, let's combine our powers and do something really special and exciting, like a podcast?
Well, Gaster is hilarious, first of all. One of the best storytellers that I've come across, and I've not been in the world of professional storytelling very long. So that's just based on people I know who just spin yarns. And of the people I know who just tell stories all the time, Gastor is one of the best I've heard. And so, because, you know, I mean, just dudes on the block always have a great story. And and so that is that. That's, you know, my yardstick, my measuring stick for that. But he actually contacted me about doing this show together, and it just sounded like such a no-brainer, such a great idea that I agreed immediately. But he will have to tell you how his brain got to that.
How did your brain get to that, Gaster?
Yeah. a few things. I'm a big fan of like East Coast hip hop. And, you know, there's this album by Capone Noriega called The War Report. And this was before Noriega became like the huge rapper in like the early 2000s. So it was like a real gritty, like New York album of these two unknown guys telling New York from their perspective. And I was like, oh, that'd be really cool to kind of do that every week on a show. Then I started like thinking about like, you know, the people that I know in the scene, and I kept thinking about how before every show, when I do a show with Shalewa, we'd kick it and hang out and we'd talk and we'd riff about what was going on in the news, you know, and we had like really funny takes and perspectives. And it was like just copacetic enough for like, I got her energy, I got her vibe. By the same token, it wasn't my vibe. It was something different, you know, so like it meshed well. And then we'd go on stage and we wouldn't talk about it at all. Like neither of us do like topical jokes where we tell much more like personal perspectives or stories. So I was like, this is all stuff that I know would work. It's funny. Our fan base would like, but they'd never get to hear. So I had this idea and I'm saying it out loud. And I think out loud, I pace back and forth in my living room when I come up with ideas to the detriment of my wife and kids, because I do that and there's no space in New York apartment. So they just hear me ramble for 2 hours every day. It is what it is. So yeah, for roughly 3 to 4 months of the quarantine, my wife just heard me every dinner that we had say, hey, you know, it'd be a real cool idea if I did this show with Shalewa where we talked about the news, call it The War Report. We could dress up, shoot the picture like the album cover. And she's like, Gaster, that sounds great. You know what would be better? And I'm like, what's that, honey? And she's like, if you told Shalewa instead of me, you know. So, yeah, after like hearing that for a few weeks, I finally called Shalewa. And she got on board right away, which further proves that my wife is way smarter than I am. But yeah, we have a great show going ever since.
I love the fact, and I'm speaking as somebody who's not a comedian, but has been in a lot of comedic spaces and been surrounded by a lot of comedians. I really love the conversation that happens between comedians when it's not on stage, because everybody obviously has their set. Everybody has an idea about where they're going to go, depending on who the audience is and the venue in which they're performing. But those behind the scenes chats must be a lot of fun, you know, regardless if it's a topic that's, you know, a little contentious, like politics, at least up until the past month or so. Shirley, well, if we could talk a little bit about those conversations, about the beauty of interacting with other comedians and kind of picking their brains on things that are totally unrelated to what we see them say on stage.
Yeah, that's it's important in a couple of ways. One, you figure out who you could work with.
Yeah.
You figure out how people's brains work. And if something comes up down the line and you're like, that's not for me, but I know someone whose brain works that way. If you're a nice person, you would let them know. If they're a nice person also, you would let them know. But you also can kind of suss out who you're willing to work with just at the moment or in the future, who you get along with, who you're willing to see in the daytime. Because that's key, because we normally only saw each other at night. So if I see another comedian in the daytime, like on purpose, and it's not a show, it's just, that's important.
Like, who's going to be a before 5 p.m. friend? Like,
right, exactly.
If you're a 5 p.m. coffee friend, then I care very deeply about you.
Different standards.
Yeah. And also, there's a great feeling to what I like to call killing in the green room. Green room killing. When you can get a room full of comedians laughing, that's usually a pretty good feeling, especially if they are ones that you respect and enjoy talking to. And if, you know, you're having a good time while doing it, that's also helpful, that you're not worried or struggling. And you, just as you keep going and you see someone like, oh, okay, that person's here. So, you know, I know the night won't be a complete waste. Like, even if we both do poorly, I know that we didn't both do poorly. Like, we can assess that in similar ways and deal with it. I know how that person deals with this kind of situation. When I see something kind of nutty, I know I won't be seeing it alone. Like, I know I can look to this other person and just go, you saw that, right? And they'll go, yeah, nope, I saw that. Because that's important as a comedian. You have to, you see things that not everyone else is seeing.
You have to be more observant than other people because you have to be able to rip off of it.
Right, exactly. So it's nice to have someone there who also saw it. That way, if you go on stage and you mention it, you know you're not going crazy. You're like, my man back there saw it too. So this is what you guys do when you think no one's watching. So it's kind of nice. It's nice in those regards.
How does it feel knowing that people are watching now with regards to how you record the podcast, how you've been able to present it to the world, that because we don't get a chance to see y'all in a typical comedy club, in a typical setting, the way we were used to, that they're still very much available to see your gestures, how you interact, how you can make each other laugh, how you can draw some stuff out of each other. That must be somewhat comforting considering the restrictions elsewhere.
Yeah, that's not bad. It's not bad.
It's good. Yeah, like I like it, but also it's made me more cautious of the fact that I'm not just talking to Shalewa.
Oh yeah, no, because comedians are ruthless and reckless. So there's always a pause before we fully speak when we know that it's also for public consumption.
Yeah, it's a different reality, because when I talk, like, I have a really family friendly brand in terms of everything I do on stage, and I'm that guy, but I'm not only that guy. So like I might have a more aggressive take than people are used to, or it might just be my initial thought. I might not have fully developed the idea like I would have when I bring something on stage. So I might say something to Shalay where it's funny, but might not be my final idea. And that'll come out on Thursday. And then I'll get like a text about like, yo, you said this on the podcast? And I won't even remember saying that. I'm like, what? So
I feel like not that many people, unless you're a podcaster or broadcaster or anything, a lot of people do not understand that sometimes we go through the motions of saying things and our mouths go a little bit faster than our brains do. And if you ask us at the end, like, hey, what was your favorite part of what you said? Sometimes it's just like, I don't know. I don't remember. It was in the heat of the moment and I just, it came out.
Yeah, I definitely black out and then I don't know what happened. And I don't even really remember. And Gastor will post like a link to the podcast and he'll reference something and I'll go, oh, did I? Huh. Well, so how about that? Okay, so I did talk about the weekend Super Bowl performance for 11 minutes nonstop. I did that. Huh. Okay.
Well, I should remind folks that the podcast is updated every Thursday. And as I mentioned, there's a lot of topics that are obviously discussed. And I'm curious about what kind of to this idea of knowing that it's for a worldwide audience, or at least a podcast listening audience that is more vast than your typical comedy club or the areas in which you're probably used to performing in. Are there things that you're just like, fuck it, I am not going to touch it. I am not going to talk about it because I kind of for this effect, like you don't want to say something that isn't formally thought out or formally fleshed out. And you want to make sure that that's not out there. Or is it because of the fearlessness that usually comes with comedy? You're like, you know what? We're going to just go what we can go with and maybe stop talking about it before we get a little further than we anticipated. How do you go about even discussing topics?
Huh. Oh, I won't talk about Beyonce.
That's the line right there.
That's it.
Is that the only thing?
That's the only thing where I've seen proof that they will mess up your credit. her fans are too hardcore and no people, the objectivity is like thrown out the window. And what I want to discuss is how no one is able to be objective about her. And that to me is kind of fascinating. But when you broach that, it's immediately like, why are you attacking? And I'm like, you know what? Never mind. I'll just back out of the room quickly. I'm not doing it.
I wonder what it is about, I mean, obviously Beyonce more so than other people, but especially when it comes to musicians or pop artists, like if you even have one little critique about them or criticism, you are automatically canceled for whatever reason. But it's so specific to entertainers. I don't know why.
I've always thought it's because they were playing when you first had sex. So you have like a different connection to that, you know, like, you know, people like what comedians do, but no one's playing Dave Chappelle when they lose their virginity. Right. It's just, it's not the connection you have with that artist. That's and fair. He has fans, but he also will have critics. Musicians have that different. They're the one group that like there's a romanticism to what you're hearing because you're remembering those moments. So yeah, they have a superpower, you know, they could also, they could play the same hit for 30 years. You know, I'm trying to find a joke I could tell every day for 30 years. I can't, you know, I got to keep coming out with new ones, you know? So yeah, they got that on us. They figured it out. You know, if in retrospect, if I could do it over, you know, maybe I would have just, you know, kept playing the drum machine. You know, I would have thought that over. I fell in love with the wrong thing, but here we are.
That's so funny. Wait, so if Shalay was his Beyonce, what's yours that is just, fuck it, you won't hear Gastor talk about it?
I would say I'm the opposite. I'm trying to find as many ways as possible to talk about how Memphis Bleek is only one degree away from Beyonce. So I'm trying to just make that connection. Hey, listen, this really average rapper from Marcy is best friends with Jay-Z to this day. So he gets to go to all of those events, all the galas, where you see these billionaires at, there's also a guy there with a fitted hat hanging out. No, I think that's beautiful. So yeah.
That's I find that so funny. Would you say that, like, I think a lot of us are coming to terms with, especially if we have been broadcasting or performing or doing any sort of commentary about what's happening in the world. Clearly, the way we approach things is much different now in a Joe Biden, now that another white older man is president compared to the other old white man who was president before. But, like, are you finding things just hit differently because we now live in a country that isn't always on alert that shit's gonna go down and that we might die?
Huh. Well, you know, with that, I didn't make a lot of jokes about Trump in the time of Trump. Just a few about reactions to some of the things that Trump did or how it may have changed, but not a lot. And I don't know if I did that because I was just like, I don't feel like broaching it. And it's also another situation where people were not being objective. I mean, that is definitely if there's a thing that I was very lucky on, was that during the time of Trump, I was telling jokes for the most part in New York City instead of in Atlanta, Georgia, where I started. And that could have been a mess. And I know Atlanta's a blue town, but I also know where the red comes in and where the red pokes out. And I, you know, and it, from what I understand, it's been the red has been popping out a lot more lately. And so
I travel.
That would have been like a bit of a nightmare in trying to navigate that. So even what I would say about Trump wouldn't even, it would just be in passing. Mm-hmm. Not like about him or a thing that he did, but just something in passing and people reacting to it. But I know that if I had attempted to just say something in passing in Atlanta, it would have been a whole thing, complete with tomatoes being thrown, the whole nine. And so I don't even know if I can't necessarily tell if the jokes are hitting different. I know that from dealing with Trump, I got a lot more metaphysical. So my jokes are a lot more, there's a lot more astrology than I ever thought there would be. That is definitely odd for me, but I don't know. I mean, and also as Gastor mentioned, we normally spoke from like personal on stage, more personal story type things. Yeah. And not necessarily what was happening at that moment. So I don't know, Gastor, did you find anything different?
I found a change when Trump started really acting up and things went wrong with the economy. I haven't had a chance as much to see live what it's like, obviously, with Biden yet, to see if it'll shift back. But the shift that I've seen is related to one thing about my persona, is because of who I am being a landlord. When I told jokes about my life as a landlord and homeowner, up until like 2017, it was like, look at that Spanish guy, he made it, you know? And then there was like a point where like people were proud of me, but also like, yo, he's, you know, you also one of the bad guys. And like, there was like a weird like tension when I brought it up. So I had to clarify. I was like, yo, it's only three apartments and I live in one of them. Like, I'm not like corporate, you know? So it's just, you know, I'm not some big like Daddy Warbucks dude. I'm paying bills. It was interesting seeing something that up until that point was kind of viewed as a success story and American dream when I presented it as a topic of discussion on a joke, started to get viewed differently for a little bit there, because unfortunately, you know, with what's happened this last year, the ugly side of that industry has come out and that dynamic has been, you know, really awkward. So, with that said, me and my tenants all love each other. We get along great. I've given them several bottles of wine and we share empanadas every Sunday. So I'm not the enemy.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's my people's right there. I'm like literally next door to Rosa right now. That's the homie. So, yeah.
I wonder if, like, now that y'all have had a chance to be away from the comedy club, at least in the ways that it was before pandemic hit, before the spring of 2020, Is there something that you just absolutely do not miss about the comedy club that you're like, you know what, if this aspect of the comedy club or just comedy never comes back, I'm good with that?
Oh, probably. Oh, gosh, the grief of trying to get into a comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of stuff that seemed ridiculous at the time. So I even, for most of it, I opted not to do it. So I'm not necessarily affiliated with a club, but because a lot of it was just like, yeah, you got to hang out there. They got to see that you're cool. You got to hang out and maybe you'll get on stage after midnight on a Tuesday. And I'm just like, that seems like a waste of time. But just the whole odd gatekeepers and who you might need to know, and being friendly in a social media way with people because they may be able to get you into places or on the places. Yeah, I'm done with that. That was a stress that I did not want then, and I definitely don't want now. Life's too short.
Yeah.
Why am I concerning myself with this little pipsqueak? Because he has the way of getting me to, you know, maybe he'll let me perform in this particular basement of this bar. I'm definitely done with that part of it. So we'll see how that goes. I did a few purges during the of name, just like, who is this again? And just let him go.
I don't need to worry about you.
Yeah, like, you're fine. I don't. Yeah. So that I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. Or hugging anyone I don't want to hug. I've had to shoot down a few of those before, and people get real weird when you're like, yeah, I don't want to hug you. And I don't know if that's a lady thing or what, but I've definitely had to strong arm a couple of guys. Like, get out of here.
They don't just say my bad. Yeah. Like, why not just say, oh, my bad, and keep moving?
That's the thing. A normal person would, if you're just like, I don't feel like hugging. A normal person, all right, no problem. But there are people who see it as a personal affront. Oh, you're not going to hug me now? No, I'm not. You're absolutely right. That's not what's going to happen. And some people, if they're around folks and they think that you're sunning them, they're just going to be like, oh, okay, well, I'll show you. I'll just try to force a hug on you in some way.
Jeez.
Sometimes I forget that being a lady doing comedy is lousy. and then someone does something like that, and I'm like, oh, that's right.
You're like, I've been so used to being within the confines of my apartment where nobody catcalls, nobody heckles.
Right, exactly. All sorts
of things to make me feel badly about my identity.
Jeez. Like, I'm pro hug, like, full transparency, but I'm also pro.
It's a Latino thing.
Yeah, like,
you don't think,
I love the hug, but I'm also okay being told, yo, nah. And I've been like, oh, true, okay. And that's it. I keep it moving. I'll actually slowly regress until we find what you're comfortable with. Like, oh, my bad. Are you cool with that? No, like, whatever you need. I'm just trying to show you I think you cool. But if you don't want that energy, that's okay. It's your space. You know,
that's wild, because I remember the first time I told a dude, nah, I don't want to hug, and he was just like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah,
like, it was notable that I remember who it was and where it happened, because that had not been the case still for in so the long. I was like, I will not unfriend him because he understood a boundary.
Yeah, how crazy is that concept?
I won't miss that.
I def don't miss the mandatory hang. Like, I like hanging. I don't like hanging when I'd rather be sleeping. You know, I just feel like that's just a simple concept. I drive, so I have that advantage, but I was blown away by how many people were like, yo, we gonna chill till 2 at this club. Like, right when the train stopped working normally in New York, that's when we might get you up on stage. Like, nah, I'm good. I'll keep it moving. And also, just cause similar to Shalewa, I didn't like playing that game, so I didn't do it. Plus, I like staying married, so I'm not hanging out until 2 in the morning when I could just be at home with the fam. But what I realize is when you're good and stuff comes out on TV that shows that you're good, they call you anyway. So, you know, and props to those clubs that didn't know me and said, hey, you looked funny, come do shows now, and didn't make me start going through that process. But yeah, I'm not about that. I can't be hanging out till 3 a.m. to do a mic in front of 4 drunk people. You know, it just doesn't add up. That's not added value in my life, you know?
Yeah.
Something, as I mentioned, like, I am not at all a comedian, but I have been around comedians for a very long time because of the professional work that I was doing. And a lot of this, like, behind the scenes stuff, behind the curtain stuff, was very fascinating to me. The idea that you have to stick around at a particular club, you have to submit certain things, you have to perform there a certain amount of times. Like, and if you don't go up at 2 a.m. on a Tuesday, then you're cast out, and now you have to go try somewhere else. Like, all of this stuff is so fascinating, especially if you're just someone at home watching a Comedy Central special, watching, you know, performances on late night. You don't think that that's the journey that each of y'all have to be on in order to even get to that point. Yes. Which is, yeah, it's insane. Ridiculous.
That's honestly, like, why, like, when you get to there comes a certain point in where, like when you start doing comedy, like, year one, there's probably like 20,000 other people like you in your city that are trash if you're one of the major cities, and it slowly filters. Like, right now I would say there's like 300 to 400 people in New York that I can kind of remember. Oh, we did mics together and we're still doing it. And we're all pretty cool. Like, I might not be best friends with them, but I'm cordial with them. And the reason is strictly because I know that they went through the same nonsense. You know, then I have my best friends within that group for sure that I'm tighter with. But I have a certain level of respect for those people because it tells me that they dealt with something. They had certain level of perseverance. They're usually a certain level of adult. You know, that you know, they probably respond to emails on time. They know how to hold the conversation. To Shalewa's point, they tend to be the guys that have boundaries, hopefully, at least of the current group coming up. But yeah, it's something that, you know, it filters out the trash, both in terms of talent, but also in terms of people. And we know that if you've made it this far, 9 times out of 10, you are a certain level of, like, competent as a person. And for the rest of those that just get by on talent, you know, you're dope at that, but I don't want to talk to you. So, yeah.
I kind of want to bring it back to the podcast again, that's called The War Report. And the image of the podcast itself, as we mentioned, was an homage to the previous album. But both of you are wearing camo. Obviously, it's reflective of the title in and of itself. Would you say that because of what you've gone through, the obstacles of either being a performer, a comedian in the New York scene or elsewhere, that you are survivors, that you have kind of put on the armor, have gone to war in this field that's very difficult and very crowded, and have somehow come out on top to be able to do this really cool project together?
Can you say all of that again when my wife is in the room? Like, I love all of that. Yeah, put all that energy out there. You're right. Daddy is out there making it happen for war, you know?
Yes. It's tough to be a performer of color.
Come in here, honey. You got to hit it.
Hey, only if I can get some empanada. But I think it's true. I think it's quite a battle y'all have had to go up against, because as you mentioned, there's so many people that are performing every single night in a city like New York, in these huge metropolitan areas. Like, you need to have your armor on in order to make sure that you come out on top.
Yeah, it's definitely you also need to be able to take the armor off to be a person, and sometimes that is tricky, but it is tough. If you really sit and think about it, it's one of those things where when you're in the middle of it and you're doing it and you're just, my calendar says this is the next thing I got to do. So you just keep going. So, having to sit down, a hard sit down for a year, I really kind of thought about, wow, I was really doing all of that. Isn't that wild? Why would I? There's nothing in my background that would lead anyone to believe I would be doing so much. That seems excessive. Why would I do all of that for jokes? That's insane.
Great tickets?
Yeah. I'm not even really getting paid for it, just for the love? That's wild.
You start to understand all those, like, backpack rappers a little differently from the 90s. Like, oh, yeah, okay. That for the love stuff. It's a real thing.
But, it is. It does. It can take a lot out of you. So, you know, you have to be able to slow down when need be. But sometimes, depending on if there's buzz on you, or, you know, everyone once you get to that level that Gastor is talking about, the way there is you have one exceptional set in front of a few people who book other things. So now you're set for the next month and a half. Suddenly people are seeing that you're doing a whole bunch of shows and they're like, well, why is this person doing a whole bunch of shows? Well, I better get him on my show and blah, blah, blah. So when you're in that kind of cycle and it just goes repeatedly like that, it you're excited that you're even getting to do this thing that before you were only doing to people who definitely didn't care and didn't want you to move forward. It really is one of those things where it takes sitting down in a rocking chair and just going, oh my goodness, I used to do 3 shows a night before you're like, oh wow, I used to, you know, I used a lot of money going all these places to tell jokes and hope and pray that people found them funny. It's such an unsure thing. It's a lot of energy spent on such an unsure thing.
Yeah. There's moments to like kind of bring me back to reality and make me appreciate what I've done. And, you know, like it's just like it's humbling in a weird way, like when you have like those like moments. Cause on the one hand, like I'm not famous. I'm not making major money from comedy at all, right? By the same token, you know, you'll do a show and like a younger comic will come up to me like, hey man, I'm a big fan, really love what you're doing. And I'm like, what are you, I'm at the same show as you, you know that, right? Like we're both here working, you know? So like, it's a weird aspect of every now and then, like someone who you respect will, you know, tell you they respect you. A younger comic will show you a weird reverence just because you've been on TV. And they still have that like glow in their eye. They're like, oh, that means you're in. And you know, you don't want to break their dreams yet, but it's you know, you're a little bit more jaded, but you need those moments too. They kind of keep you going. And then other things, like there's other little moments that kind of just make the wars worth it. I still remember getting out of a TV taping the first time I brought my wife to a TV taping. And while getting out, they're getting ready to go in for the next set of shows. And someone on the line recognizes me from Comedy Central, but it was in front of my wife, you know? So that was like extra cool. Cause it was the moment for her to see like, oh, all those nights you leave us alone for dinner is a payoff, you know, like it was mm-hmm. worthwhile, you know? So I'm sorry, my beans were cold when I got home, but you know, there's a reason for that. So yeah, like I agree with Chile with this death real work. There's a cost, both economic and time, that we've given to something that economically hopefully pays off, but might not. But it enriches us in other ways. You know, it keeps me sane. So I'm with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope our listeners get a chance to tune into the podcast, which is updated every Thursday. Again, as a reminder, it's called The War Report with Gastor Almonte and Chile with Sharp. Tune in as much as possible. And as I mentioned, there is a video component. If you look online on YouTube, be sure to tune into that too, because I think you'd want to see both of these performers at the top of their game interact with each other, because it's so much fun to watch. But thank you all so much for joining me and having this really cool conversation about putting on your armor and going to war for the sake of comedy.
Thanks again.
Appreciate you having us, homie.